Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 7th, 2018. Taban Dengai returns to the ruling SPLM party.
All SPLM members and cadres are directed to strictly observe this reunification process as stated in the Arusha Agreement on 21st January 2015.
And an analyst says the move by first vice president is strategic.
The president now is armed to reallocate those positions as he wish, because the positions were obtained by virtue of them being members of an opposition and part of a power-sharing arrangement.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai, has dissolved his faction of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition. Deng told reporters in Juba today that he is merging his party with the SPLM in government led by President Salva Kiir. Deng says merging the various factions of SPLM gives South Sudanese leaders more powers to address obstacles blocking the road to peace in South Sudan. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
I would therefore like to announce on behalf of the SPLM-IO structures and the entire membership of the party the dissolution of the SPLM-IO organs, including chapters, and declare them to be united with the SPLM, the historic liberation party in the Republic of South Sudan. All SPLM members and cadres are directed to strictly observe this reunification process as stated in the Arusha Agreement on 21st January 2015.
That is Taban Dengai, chairman of a faction of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, or AMI, in opposition, addressing reporters in his office this morning. Guy says he is implementing a resolution that the National Liberation Council, or NLC, a legislative body of the ruling SPLM party, passed last week. The resolution also calls for all factions of the SPLM to reunite as one party as stipulated in the Arusha Reunification Agreement signed in January 2015. But key signatories to the Arusha Agreement, Pagan Amum and rebel leader Riek Machar, did not participate in last week's NLC meeting. Guy says his group believes a reunified SPLM will address some of the challenges facing the country and prepare for elections so citizens can choose their leaders.
Unification of SPLM will give more power, more spirit, more energy to the party to strike on the areas of making peace a lasting result. We believe the unification of SPLM will help in that direction. The challenge is also of lack of confidence among the communities in the Republic of South Sudan is one of the challenges. The SPLM, the new rejuvenated SPLM, will be fighting tribalism. We reconcile communities. This is very important. We stop child abduction, cater wrestling. We shall continue with the disarmament of the civilian so that people are secure.
Guy claims the reunited SPLM will also work to develop the security sector and improve working relationship between South Sudan and international community. First Vice President Guy gave directives to his SPLM-IO chapters in Uganda, Kenya, Sudan, Ethiopia, Australia, and the United States to merge into the SPLM mainstream. He also ordered his forces in Greater Upper Nile, Meridi, Mundri, Yei River State, Eastern Equatoria, and others training in Mapele to be integrated into the National Army. Guy says his group will continue to participate in the talks under the government delegation. He says he will continue to serve in the transitional government of national unity as first vice president until the SPLM conducts elections as per the Arusha agreement.
What we are implementing the Arusha agreement. The Arusha agreement is very clear that the faction of the SPLM will continue leading an interim government until you have an election. Tigono is going to continue existing. Since Tigono is continuing to exist, we shall continue to have one delegation to negotiate with the opposition.
Guy, a former chief negotiator of former First Vice President Riek Machar, formed his faction of SPLM-IO after Machar was forced to leave Juba following renewed fighting between government forces and his bodyguards in the capital in July 2016. Guy's party has a 33% share of executive and legislative positions in the transitional government of national unity. Guy's group holds 10 out of 30 ministerial positions in the national government. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on that news, the director of the Juba-based SAD Institute says the move by Taban Dengai could lead to a serious power struggle within the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement. Jock says the 2015 power-sharing arrangement has been undermined by Taban Dengai's decision to join the SPLM.
We have to assume that the situation in the country is where people really adhere to anything to do with regulations and law. But that aside, I think what this means is that Taban will go straight now to vie for a second position in the party, in the newly formed party, such that there will likely be some squabbles within the new party now, because it means that he will be trampling on some people who are senior to him.
The second position in the SPLM, as it is now, is Waniga's position, because Waniga is the deputy chairman of the SPLM. Are you saying that Taban Dengai is going to replace Waniga in the SPLM?
That is exactly what I mean by squabbles and probably intense competition for the restructuring of the hierarchy. But to be fair, I mean, Taban said in his press conference that if the SPLM decides to put him in his tukul, back in his village, to run whatever position is given to him in the hierarchy of the party, he will serve. But we all know that this is mere politics.
Let's step aside and look at the 2015 power-sharing deal that was signed between SPLM in government, SPLM in opposition, the former detainees, and the other political parties. Each group was given a percentage in the power-sharing deal. What are the implications of those percentages in the backdrop of Taban announcing today that he has dissolved SPLM-IO?
Well, Taban was aiming at one thing, but he has also set himself up in some other ways, including the possibility that the president, President Salva Kiir Mayardit, will now be armed to do with Taban's job and with the ministerial jobs that the SPLIO had in the government. The president now is armed to reallocate those positions as he wish, because the positions were obtained by virtue of them being members of an opposition and part of a power-sharing arrangement. Now that power-sharing arrangement will be undermined. They will all be SPLA, SPLM, and therefore the president will reallocate as he sees fit.
Dr. Jock Madud, but the agreement, the 2015 peace deal, stipulates clearly that the position of the first vice president goes to SPLM-IO.
Well, but that is part of the reason why the peace agreement ARCIS is being quote unquote revitalized through IGAD process in Addis Ababa, and I think such problems as will arise out of this new arrangement will now be part of the process that will start on the 17th of May.
There's a joke in Juba these days that, you know, they have codenamed the US dollar as General Dollar. They say General Dollar is now in charge, and because of that, the government is talking sense.
There's no question about that, President Kiir's declaration at the meeting of the National Liberation Council that he is now inviting IGAD to try to get Riek Machar to come back to Juba so that he can join hands with his brothers and sisters to build peace. That announcement was shocking to a lot of people, given what the president had just said not long before about regretting having not killed Riak and political detainees when he had the chance. And so to go from that to a stage where you are now saying Riak is invited to come home, it was shocking to a lot of people. But that means that the pressures are really mounting on the government, not the least the economic pressures. The purchasing capacity of the ordinary citizen is reduced manifold, obliterated for others. In fact, I was just reading today about how the prices of commodities in Bor, for example, have gone beyond the capacity of any citizen in that town.
The question about the power-sharing distribution is, and Taban Dengai has dissolved his SPLM-IO, and he has joined SPLM in government. Now, the transitional government of national unity has two vice presidents from one party. So this is going to be SPLM in charge of the government, because the president is SPLM, the first vice president is SPLM, and the vice president is SPLM. Is there a power-sharing deal in the transitional government of national unity? Are we talking about power-sharing deal here, or this is just one-party rule?
No, I mean, even in practice, despite all that arrangement, I don't really think it had been a power-sharing agreement. Yes, legally it was, but in practice, on a daily basis, it was still SPLM in government that called the shots. This is only a cosmetic rearrangement of Taban joining the SPLM in government, because in essence, he had been, all this time that he had been first vice president. SPLM-IO Taban faction does not, even as they talk about cadres and talk about SPLM forces belonging to them, there is no question that they don't have much, and that their presence in this current government was simply to the mercy of the SPLM in government.
That's Jock Madu Jock, founder and director of the SAD Institute. He was speaking with me earlier today from New York. The South Sudan government says it is ready to negotiate with anybody, anytime, anywhere, because it has always wanted peace. This comes after IGAD invited the main parties to Ethiopia for consultation. The regional group says it wants to break the deadlock during the next round of talks. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makui tells VOA's James Batty the regional body's shuttle diplomacy has failed to produce results because IGAD has not ironed out the differences between the parties.
What I know is that when the IGAD delegation came to us here and they went back in Addis Ababa for 4 days, and our advice to them was that as long as you have decided to go in for a chattering diplomacy does not mean that you visit me once and you go back, talk to others once and you go back. You are supposed to carry messages and proposals and positions from the different parties, exchange views, and you come up with your own proposals as well, so that you can at least bring the parties together and make them understand the situation better. But if you come once and then you decide to call the parties, then definitely your efforts of chattering diplomacy are bound to fail. Because so far, when they came to us here, they did not even tell us as to whether they have reached anything with the opposition on the other side on any of the points. Instead, what they brought to us were actually issues that widened the gap further.
So, as you said, Minister, they were widening gaps between your position and that of the rebels. At some point, people thought that both sides were intransigent. So, has there been any change in the positions?
Well, the government had ever been there. We clearly stated last time that the position which were presented on Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 are negotiating positions. The opposition so far has not tabled anything before the mediators up to now. Instead, they wait for the position prepared by mediators and they pick that position, which is not correct. An example is that they are talking of none of the parties should have even a simple majority in the parliament. If there is no simple majority, if you have 50-50 in the cabinet, it means that the cabinet will never pass any resolution. So to us, in fact, the position which they brought has even widened the gap further.
The next consultation is coming up probably this week, May 10th to the 12th, and then the next round is the 17th. Do you think it's worth it to go if these positions have not been ironed out?
Well, it is not advisable to call the parties as long as IGAD has not yet ironed out some of these differences, at least to bridge the gap. And as long as the gap is getting wider and wider, then why call the parties? Why call people for an obvious outcome?
Meaning an obvious outcome of failure?
Yes, definitely.
So does that mean the South Sudan government will not attend or will attend this meeting?
We are ready to negotiate negotiate with anybody, anytime, anywhere, and so forth. Because what we need is peace for our people. But unfortunately, and to our surprise, the mediators, instead of asking the other party, instead of asking the opposition to give their written position, they instead respond to our position, which is not, to me, in my weak opinion, I believe that this is not supposed to be the position of a mediator.
That's South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe. He was speaking with VOA's James Batty earlier today from Juba. SPLM in opposition senior member attending high-level revitalization forum says the two previous consultations have not been productive. Angelina Teng says the parties are still in their desired positions and nothing has changed. Teng is quick to put the blame on the government in Juba, who she says has not met them halfway.
It's Michael Makwe and his regime that are the obstacle, in fact, because they are so intransigent on some of the positions that they are holding, positions that cannot actually produce any sustainable resolution. But also, to be fair, yes, when we consulted with the IGAD Council of Ministers as opposition, they have just presented us with a list of differences on both governance and security arrangement, and they were asking us to compromise. So we were wondering, you know, whom we compromise with, because we are in a room with the mediation, and the other party is not there, and we don't know what the other party, you know, is thinking. And it's like, you know, you're asking us to compromise when everything and all the, you know, all the cards are with the government. Because, you know, if anybody is to really compromise in this situation, it should be the regime, because the regime holds all the cards. The regime has been responsible for, you know, the start of the war in 2013, responsible for the start of the war again, and the abrogation of the agreement in 2016. And that's on record. That's not my statement or IO's statement. So if they hold all the cards, they call all the shots. So you cannot also come to a party that has nothing to offer to tell them, you know, you compromise. Compromise on what? So for us, we felt that we thought when we were called for the consultation, we thought that maybe the IGAD mediation team and the Council of Ministers had done some homework with Juba, and maybe Juba had actually made some offers to be told to us that these are the offers, and let's see how we can, you know, whether this can work, because we're the people who have fears. You know, we went to Juba in good faith. We took people to Juba, and those people died. So we have a major responsibility. You can't just jump into an agreement without ensuring that you don't take people again back to Juba and they end up dead. So we have that responsibility. And we have not seen anything from the side of Juba to give us the confidence that, you know, 2016 will not occur again. And when IGAD asked us to compromise, they had nothing to offer. So in that sense, I could say that, yes, maybe it didn't produce the desired result, because the parties are still on their own positions and nothing has changed.
Now, you told this program last month that you believe IGAD was pushing your group into a tight corner. Is that still your position?
We've been telling IGAD that please, it is best that you be a mediator that is fair, that is partial. Because right now, your partiality would be in question, especially when Juba sits in the meetings where decisions are taken with regards to the conflict and the conflict resolution in South Sudan, when Juba is actually a party to the conflict. So this is one thing. And sometimes the kinds of proposal, like the last proposal that was given to us by IGAD, as a way forward. It's literally kind of the proposal that you hear from Juba, only with minor changes here and there. And we stated that very clearly, that, you know what, this position is not that dissimilar from the position that is being sold by Juba to us here. And these positions are really not workable.
Taban Dengai's opposition party has announced today its intention to join the SPLM, led by President Salva Kiir. Your reaction to that?
It's a non-event, because in our view, these are people who have already joined, when the coup that schemed in Juba to really destroy the peace agreement. They literally joined the government, and in our view, they've never stood as a party.
That was Angelina Teng speaking to Ayen Deng Bior from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN Refugee Agency is facing problems in Uganda. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how has technology impacted your life?
When I want information, I just pick my phone. I just go to Google, and all the information that I want, I get it just right where I stand.
It made me to be so social to people, like on Facebook. I've known so many people, knowing how they are going on in life, and also on WhatsApp, chatting with my friends.
It's educative to me as well, because if I need to know something about history, something about a disease, something about some medicine, I just go and read about it online.
When I need information, I don't necessarily have to go to the library. All I need to do is just pick up my tablet and I Google whatever I want to know about whilst in the comfort of my home.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. UNHCR says the process of verifying refugee numbers in Uganda has run into some trouble. A UN refugee agency official says a combination of logistical challenges, misinformation, and alleged threats against refugees have slowed down the process of verifying all the 1.4 million refugees. Simon Peter Apiku has the story for VOA from Nyumbe District in Uganda's West Nile region.
UNHCR spokesperson Dunia Khan says her agency initially plans to verify about 18,000 refugees per day, but they are doing far less than that. She says one of the major challenges is delays caused by heavy rains. UNHCR also had to train staff and deploy new equipment at every location, often in adverse conditions. Khan says many refugees don't want to be verified, especially in Bidibidi refugee settlement in Nyumbe district, because they don't understand its importance. Khan says certain individuals have warned refugees not to participate in the exercise. She says UNHCR is still gathering information, but it appears certain members of the host community around the Bidibidi settlement managed to somehow get themselves registered as refugees.
So when we came across the reports of refugees being discouraged or threatened not to participate, we convened community meetings, not only with refugee elders, but with local elders also, where we communicated to them about the process and the importance of this process, and also to ensure that those refugees who come for verification should be protected.
Lege Michael, a South Sudanese refugee leader at Bidibidi, says he has been told about nationals registering at the camps so they can receive assistance meant for refugees, which he says could be the reason why some people are discouraged from showing up to be verified.
That's why last time We heard rumors that people were using money to get it biometrically registered. So,
Noah Aziz is the council chairperson for Luzira, one of the nearest villages to the Bidibidi refugee settlement. He denies that certain community members convinced refugees to abstain from taking part in the verification process, but admits having refugees on their land brings enormous benefits to his community. Aziz says, before the arrival of the refugees, water and food used to be a problem in his village, but all that has now changed. He says the presence of the refugees has also brought some development to his remote village.
There is no such thing, as these people are advising the refugees not to participate in the verification exercise. It has not happened.
Wani Taban is also a community leader responsible for some 5,000 refugees at the Bidibidi settlement. He says some refugees were mistreated during previous registration exercises.
They could even refuse your own child that why should you have more than 7 children or 5 we are going to register for? You see, those things happen there. They pushed people like nothing. So mothers were suffering with the children in the line, hungry. People suffer there a lot.
Khan says such challenges have slowed down the process of verifying refugee numbers in Uganda, which is needed to help with investigations into allegations of corruption and fraud by Ugandan officials. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Yumbe.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Kalina Sala Bullet by Lomerika San. We have been listening to Lomerika San with that song, Kalina Shtakal, which means let's work to fix South Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to hear what you think about this show. You can find us on the web. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Asha sala bele de, geli nesta ta. Asha sala bele de, geli nesibu shoko kaselani yakona.
kwa tsakete akwana a.